Hello and welcome to History Hack. Matt here today as Alex and Alina have let me fly solo on a full fat History Hack outing, as I'm delighted to be able to welcome one of my favorite directors working today to the show. As you may hear at some point, we may be sponsored today by Tree Surgeons, who are there for all your tree trimming needs and making a racket in the back of a podcast. So today we're going to be chatting with Sam Pilling. Sam is the award-winning director of music videos for the likes of DJ Shadow, Chaka Khan, The Weeknd, and for those commercials you will have seen from IKEA with the hair, KFC, and Coors Beer with the chap swimming through all the snow. His video for DJ Shadow's collaboration with hip-hop legends De La Soul recently won the UK Music Video Awards Award Video of the Year, and Sam was listed by Campaign Magazine as one of their top 10 directors of 2020. Sam's repped by Pulse Films, and I'm delighted to welcome him to the show. Sam, how's it going?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me. Very happy to be here chatting to you.
Lockdown for you is a bit different because you're in Prague, aren't you?
I am indeed, yes. Certainly lockdown's been a bit crazy work-wise with commercials and music videos at the start of the year. Everything kind of ground to a halt. But it seems that recently, now that we sort of know what the beast is that we're dealing with, production has kind of slowly ramped back up again. So yeah, I'm in Prague shooting a commercial.
So I guess it makes life a little bit more interesting with all the COVID restrictions and having to stay away from everybody. And
interesting is one word. difficult, really. I mean, I think so much of what we do is all about communication. And I think the thing I've realized, which I guess I just had taken for granted, is how much we read people's faces when we talk to each other. It's very difficult, you know, in production, you're always meeting new people, talking about things that maybe haven't been done or haven't been done in that way before. And to do all of that behind a mask is, it just makes it all a bit harder.
I started a new job during lockdown and I've met my colleagues twice.
Wow.
other than doing like Zoom calls and things. So
that's tricky.
It's that communication and body language and just getting people's vibes and
totally.
Anyways, let's do this thing. So we're going to be talking to you about historical accuracy because you've made two fantastic videos that take place within a time and place. If you're listening and you want to know what we're talking about, I would highly recommend you going away and Googling DJ Shadow Rocket Fuel, which is Sam's take on the moon landings, and the fantastic video he did for Chaka Khan's Hello Happiness. And go watch them, come back, and we'll crack on. Right, hope you enjoyed them. So here we go. Let's really talk about sort of the process that goes into making one of these things, because as history fans, we're very good at complaining about stuff, but we're very bad at knowing the sort of efforts you go to. So where does the germ of a video or a commercial come from when you're putting it together? What's that idea, that spark?
To be honest, it all depends on the track that you have, that you're given, or sometimes you get a brief. I think what's great about the more years that I've been directing is you get to be a little bit pickier with the music that you choose to write ideas for. In both of those videos, essentially, I was allowed to come up with my own ideas. I had the creative freedom. So really, you know, the kernel of an idea can spark from a lyric, you know, the style of a piece of music, just a vibe. You know, sometimes you're trawling through the internet, you've got the song on loop and a clip comes up, or, you know, something from a film or another video or something, and that sparks an idea. Sometimes it's an image. I'm often influenced by a lot of photography, in fact, for different projects. And that image can sometimes spark an idea. So, yeah, ideas come from anywhere, really, which is it's a terrible, terrible answer. It's like a politician's answer. But yeah, for example, with Chaka Khan, the song's called Hello Happiness, and she is a complete 70s, 80s legend and icon. And although the music is a fusion of, you know, harking back to that period of time, but with a modern twist, for me, the video had to be set in the 70s. And because it was called Hello Happiness, you know, I started kind of just looking at 70s movies, and it became a bit of an homage to the lost phone booth. You know, the phone booth scene in films, you know, that was, there's so many films you know, from the Conversation, Serpico, Shaft, Dog of the Afternoon, Goodfellas, Rosemary's Baby, Taxi Driver, Annie Hall, Jewel, and I could go on, where crazy things happen in or around a phone booth. And, you know, in our modern society with mobile phones, phone booths are, you know, redundant. So it was a kind of like a bit of an homage to the phone booth, essentially.
So is it easier making a 70s video when you have a 70s goddess appearing in your video?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look, I think she's Chaka Khan's, you know, I mean, she's a legend. I mean, I don't know. It's a tricky one to answer. I mean, yes, I think one thing I would say, and it's funny because it could come back to, you could talk about it from films or commercials or music videos, but really the only reason to tell a story in the past, in fact, I'll rephrase that. You need a good reason to tell a story in the past. There's so many great stories. I think why potential stories out there, why would you set it in the past? I think because it is a strain on production and budget and made all the more difficult locations. So I think you need to have a really good reason to set whatever you're making in the past.
To make sure that it's a part of it as opposed to just something to distract from the lack of story.
Exactly, exactly. Otherwise it's just a gimmick.
So I think the Hello Happiness video is fantastic because you get a lot going on in that brief moment. So it's, do you want to just describe it? If people haven't taken the moment to Google it like we told them to a second ago, but do you want to describe the video? Because it is really cool.
Yeah, essentially it's a day in the life of a phone booth. More specifically, the nefarious characters that are hanging out in and around the phone booth and using it in different ways. And the whole thing, it takes place across one night, and the different characters' stories are intercut throughout without ever actually intersecting at all. It's a bit of a long-winded answer, but I think that's... And that's what it is.
I think you've got it in a classic sort of US down at heel motel, haven't you? And it's that sort of sucks you straight in with that sort of weird U-shaped forecourt that they always have. And
exactly. And that, I mean, that itself was it was so tricky. I mean, it's one of those things, those kind of 70s neon lit motels that we are so used to seeing in movies, but now so many of them have been destroyed, or, you know, part of it, the facade still remains, but there's a modern building right next to it. I think we scouted 30 motels, the producer and I, cruising around the valley at night, trying to find hotels and motels.
That must have been an experience.
Yeah, it was fun. It was really good fun. I'm a bit of a, whenever it comes to location shoots, anyone that's ever had the misfortune of working with me knows that I'm a bit of a stickler, and I like to leave no stone unturned. So I think we probably found that motel at about number 15, but I had to see the other 15 just to make sure that it was the right one.
Just in case there was a better one down the road.
You never know, right?
So one of the things in my research before chatting to you is, in one of your behind the scenes video, you talked about getting the feel of a visual right. And I was really, really intrigued with that because, you know, getting that sort of sense of place, especially in the Hello Happiness video, you get that straight off the bat. How do you describe that feel when you're looking for your visual?
Yeah, I mean, it's there's a lot of it. I mean, to be honest, a lot of it comes down to your art direction. You know, it's we specifically, and the base of that is always your location. So that's your base layer. So we were looking for, yeah, your kind of archetypal motel parking lot, and then it's the details. So, you know, again, you don't really see the cars that much, but it was important that those were 70s cars that you could expect to have seen in the 70s. It's not like we're ever seeing a close-up on the car, but if the shape of the cars in the background were wrong, you'd feel it. And you know, we get away with a few bits that definitely aren't 70s, but I think it's all about the art direction. And then on top of that, it's then about the wardrobe. You know, you have all of these pieces of a visual, and they all have to work together, really. And it's one of those where, you know, if something is glaringly, like obviously wrong, it breaks the spell. So, I mean, the first port of call was obviously finding one of the old phone booths. And then, yeah, and then the cars. And I mean, really, we in terms of dressing, other than the cars and a bit of neon, the location was as is. And then, of course, wardrobe is super important. And we were lucky enough to be working with a really great costume designer, Derricka Cole Washington, in LA, who my DP had actually worked with on a previous project that was also period, and was just really impressed by her level of detail. So yeah, I mean, I think the outfits, they are like a big part of the video. If they were different or wrong or not quite as good, I think it would suffer, or would have suffered.
I should let you take a sip.
Classic Brit, can't do anything without a cup of tea.
Oh yeah, too right, it is that time of day.
Yes, very good.
There we go. Okay, so a music video is what, 3 to 5 minutes long. So when you're putting that together, how much would you have to film to be able to get to that, when you're giving yourself enough wiggle room in the edit to find that feel that you're talking about? Or do we see everything on the screen because that's all the budget allowed?
Yes and yes. But I mean, very good question. obviously you want as much footage as possible in order to have options. The flip side of that is you're always working to a budget, and music video budgets are never very big, even, you know, for some big artists, in fact. So we shot the whole video in one night, shooting dusk and dawn. And we shot on film, which both the DP and I felt was another one of those important little details to get right. It's a 70s film, 70s homage. 70s films were shot on film. And I think that texture and that kind of, that quality of the image, again, just helps embed it within that genre. So that was important, but we had a lot to shoot. In a commercial, it would have been a 2-day shoot. So we were trying to squeeze a lot of action into one night. And of course, night shoots are difficult because, well, for so many reasons, but people get tired. And yeah, you, with film, it's a bit of a process. So, you rehearse a few times because you don't have, it's not like digital. You can't just shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot. So you're limited by the number of roles, and the number of roles are limited because it's a music video and you haven't got the budget to just have hundreds of roles. So you rehearse and you rehearse, and then you try and shoot one or two or three takes. And again, because we had time against us, some of those shots were one takes and we got them in one, and then we had to move on. And it was a case of, yeah, maybe I would have liked to have had a bit more time to finesse, but at the detriment of shooting something else. So I don't know if that's even answered your question.
No, that's it, which is actually, it was a question I wasn't sure I was going to ask, which is the film and digital thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's weird talking about sort of period pieces and those constraints of shooting on, you know, the classic celluloid format versus just having a hard disk that will run until it tops out.
Exactly.
I guess that really sort of, as you're saying, focuses what you need to do, because it's a finite resource as opposed to just deleting and starting again.
Yeah, most directors would agree with me in that and DPs would agree with me in that it's the preferred way of shooting. You know, it's you really craft each moment and each scene, and then you shoot it a handful of times, having done the legwork in rehearsals. But obviously, that there is a luxury of time, you know, that you need for that. Whereas with digital, you know, you can be rolling for 20-minute takes, which has its advantages when you're up against the clock and you need to quickly reset. And even, you know, there's the process of shooting on film. You know, you can't just press record and go. You've got, you know, sync or, you know, the clapperboard. And it's all just a bit more of a process, which focuses your mind, which is a really great thing. But it's not necessarily great when you're up against the clock.
Having no idea until you just said it, that is a lot to have gotten in one night shoot, because you've got a lot going on in that video. It doesn't really pause at all.
Yeah. And actually, we were meant to shoot more, and some scenes with some of those characters had to get dropped. But and then just to make matters more difficult, or well, not even more difficult, but at the very start of the day, so when we were setting up that afternoon, the original intention was, well, referencing Fight Club. There's a very famous telephone scene with Edward Norton in Fight Club, and the camera rotates around the telephone booth. And our intention, at least, you know, part of the idea and part of the concept, was that we were going to have the camera on a track and we were going to circle around our booth for the whole video, some wide shots, some close-ups, which is much more a music video format, in fact, or, you know, gives it more of a technique. So we were all set up with the dolly and the track, and we did a pass, and the DP and I just looked at each other and we knew it was wrong. So it was like, and we've worked together for many years, and we have a shorthand, which again, on a project like this is essential. But we looked at each other and we both, and then, you know, we went over and talked, and we were just like, it feels like a gimmick. And, you know, actually everything else we're doing is trying to make it not feel like a gimmick. So yeah, so we quickly decided, okay, let's go handheld. And I had to send it in to the music video commissioner. That sort of was a bit of a time eater as well, but it was the right decision. So I'm glad we did it.
I had that song on repeat so much over the last year, because it's a great song for when things aren't going great. Because, you know, the lyrics, her voice, yeah, the video is great fun as well. It's fantastic. So what is Chaka Khan like?
Chaka Khan's amazing. Chaka Khan is exactly as you'd expect a 70s disco diva to be. And she's earned the right to be a disco diva. For a woman who used to be in the Black Panthers, she's come out the other side of a drug addiction. She's a walking legend. And she was great fun, not the easiest to work with at times, because she's earned the right to say no, or she's earned the right to do what she wants. And that's that. We shot her at the very start for our kind of twilighty period at the start of the shoot. And when she was ready, she came down into the parking lot, and but she was wearing Crocs, and Crocs are not 70s, but she wasn't going to put the boots on that our costume designer Derica had found. And we'd found several options, and she was adamant she wasn't going to wear any of them. So she just turned to me and she's just like, "You'll just crop them out, right? I mean, what do you say?" I mean, the answer is yes, of course, Chaka, we'll crop them out. So that's what we did.
That's fantastic. Okay, so let's get into the nitty gritty. A completely different type of video. We're going DJ Shadow, De La Soul, Rocket Fuel, huge track off DJ Shadow's last album, which I've been a DJ Shadow fan since, you know, introducing back in the day.
So likewise.
When I saw this pop up, I'm one of those sad stalkery sort of fans that sort of goes, that looks like Sam Pilling did that one. And you Google, and it is. You have a style, sir. So, you know, to the listener, Sam now looks terrified.
No, that's good to hear. That's good to hear, for sure.
Describe the video for us, because this one's a lot of fun, and it takes a hard turn a minute or so into it. So give us a spiel. Give us your take on it.
So it's a reenactment of the iconic 1969 Apollo 11 moon landing, where the moon landing was in fact faked and was being filmed by Kubrick. And the whole thing unravels and comes undone because Neil and Buzz get into a fist fight because Neil decides to go down and be the first man to step down on the moon. And actually Buzz wanted to. And it's all riffing off the fact that it was no sort of secret that the two of them didn't really get on. Yeah, again, go back to the idea stage, you know, the track was called Rocket Fuel. So automatically you start thinking of rockets and that kind of thing. 2019 was the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. So it's kind of on your mind anyway. And there's a sort of anarchic nature to the, you know, to the sound of the track. And in fact, the lyrics, one of the lyrics are a close encounter of some kind. So again, it all just kind of, yeah, that all just kind of fueled the idea, and that's how I got there.
We're gonna get into the rabbit hole of conspiracy a little bit later. This is where that sort of design budget, the feel of getting the time and the period right. And another thing I'm just going to recommend is to watch the video and then watch the behind the scenes, because it is super cool. Because this is the second time you went out to the Ukraine to work with Radioactive, wasn't it?
Well, it's the second time so Radioactive also shot my first, or we also shot our first DJ Shadow video in Kiev with Radioactive. I've worked with them, I've actually lost count how many times I've shot in Kiev, but the Radioactive crew are amazing and always deliver for us. So having shot the first one there, there was nowhere else but there to shoot the second one. But yeah, in terms of the kind of the image and the art side of it, you know, we were riffing off an iconic historic event that's incredibly well documented, you know, photographed and ingrained in our subconscious. And as such, the visuals had to be as spot on as we could make them within the budget that we had. And we didn't quite manage to do it in the budget that we had, but we were close, I hope. We were as close as we could get. But yeah, it was, so, you know, it was paramount that our sets looked like the real thing. So, you know, we worked closely with Vlad, the production designer out in Kiev, who's amazing and had such a great eye for detail. You know, I came to him with a load of, you know, the original kind of Hasselblad photos that were taken, a load of screen grabs from the Apollo 11 documentary that had just come out, and even First Man as well, because they'd done it on a Hollywood budget, but they'd done an amazing job at visualizing it. So those were our reference points. And Vlad, he actually built a little small scale model of the lunar module and the moon land, the moon surface and all that. And then getting the mission control center, that was a really, really tough one, because we were never going to be able to build the scale of the actual mission control center. So we had to be smart and, you know, decided to only build a kind of a third or a segment of it. But even then, you know, we had to find essentially an old office space that would let us completely transform it. So yeah, and you know, that had a similar enough column and similar enough lighting and ceiling panels that a viewer wouldn't question it. And because the whole idea of the video was that we were always going to be using archive. So because we were going to have some shots that were actual, you know, actually from mission control and, you know, from the real thing, it was even more important that our set looked vaguely passable as the real thing.
What was your test for that? Is it eyeballing it? Is it filming it and playing it back? You know, because it's that feel again, and it looks fantastic. I suppose if I was to go frame by frame, I could probably spot things. And I'm sure somebody out there did, because there is those sorts of people. But, you know, I guess what's the criteria for signing off on that? Is it we're running out of time and we've got to film this thing? Or,
I mean, yeah, we had where to begin. I mean, for example, and this is where it gets so crazy and silly, but the headsets that the mission control workers are wearing, we couldn't find those headsets. So we had to take headsets that they could find and make headsets that looked, again, close enough. They're not the same, but close enough that you don't question it at the time. So it was just, it's those details again. So, you know, the main thing was really the consoles themselves. And I wanted to make sure that we had some buttons that lit up and some of those screens embedded in there that were in camera and practical. The mill, VFX post house helped us and finished, you know, gave the console, gave the lights a finish and basically pushed it into that. It was the cherry on top that made it all feel very real, embedded screen footage into the screens and made it all come alive. But it was making sure that we had the structure, the basis, the color of the consoles, you know, the big screens at the back, getting the shape right. Again, the ceiling in our location was nowhere near as high as the real thing. You know, it's all a cheat. So the process really, you know, it's talking with the production designer. It's then, you know, he made models, CAD models, or the equivalent of 3D models online that we look at. We looked at the rotation, the positioning. I then fine tune with him. We have loads of conversations about how it's too expensive, blah, 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 blah. And time as well. You know, I know that they worked literally round the clock and to the wire to the day before to get it done. I think they were still pouring bags of cement onto our moon surface the morning of our shoot, which nobody thanked me for when we were all hocking out. I mean, we were all wearing masks. It was like a COVID shoot, in fact, because, yeah, the air wasn't great in there. But again, you know, it's that detail. So at first somebody said sand, and actually sand's just too orange. It's too warm. So we ended up with a mixture of concrete and sand. And that gave us the right color. And yeah, we studied, you know, Vlad and myself studied many photos of the lunar module. And I mean, we used kind of gold tinfoil essentially for some of those bits. And actually the color gold that we had on set, so in camera, wasn't really right. But thankfully, the colorist at the mill, Tom Mangum, did an amazing job again. So both him and the VFX guys, we kept referring back to those original Hasselblad photographs, and we used them as a reference point to then make sure that the color of the gold was absolutely, you know, spot on as we could make it.
So you walk onto the moon set, you've got your lunar lander, you've got the moon, and you've got a director's chair with Kubrick on it. How did that feel? Because that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, it was. Listen, it was. I have to say, the whole thing was so much fun. We shot for 2 days. The first day was the moon landing set. I think it was a 22-hour shoot day, which is horrific. But you know, we had to get it done. But yeah, it was great fun. Listen, I think I loved that we were taking, you know, a historical event and having a bit of fun with it and putting a little twist on it. And I think Kubrick's anarchic nature, I was hopeful that somewhere he wasn't turning in his grave and he appreciated the homage and the nod. But again, that's another sort of really important point is the casting, you know, it was, and the wardrobe again. So we worked with this amazing costume designer, Mr. Gammon from the UK. And it, you know, again, studied so many photos of Kubrick on set, what he wore in that period, making sure the tie and the blazer felt spot on, looking at his director's chair, making sure that felt right. We even cut our actor's hair to give him more of a receding hairline to match Kubrick's.
But he loved you for that.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was actually super chuffed to be playing Kubrick, right? And I'd sent him a load of footage that I'd found online that was like the only footage of Kubrick on set. So I'd sent that to him so he could study his mannerisms so that he could have a fighting chance doing the role justice. And then of course with Buzz and Neil, you know, we were limited by the fact that we were using stunt actors and that we're in Kiev. So, you know, it was a case of finding stunt actors who were really good at stunts, but also really good at acting and looked vaguely like Buzz and Neil. And that was, I mean, literally they were the only two options, in fact, really, when we boiled it down, they were the only two. And, you know, we spray tanned their faces so they looked more tanned and American. And thankfully, you know, you put someone in a helmet and it masks a lot of, you know, yeah. So they were close enough to the look.
Thank goodness Neil had that little bit of tuft of hair coming out of.
Absolutely. Again, crucial detail.
So the tree surgeons have arrived. So I apologize for any background noise that is seeking through. I think that the fun bit for me when I watched it the first time is that moment when it all goes horribly wrong. You've got the rock, paper, scissors inside the lunar module. And you've got an inkling about what's about to happen, but you just ramp it up and ramp it up as that beat in the song is just getting sort of going and going and going. You just turn it up to 11. that must have been a lot of fun to get right, to have, you know, these two iconic characters just going for it on the moon.
Yeah, it was so much fun. And again, it's funny because talking about the seed of the idea, I'd just seen, you know, I had this image in my head of two astronauts in their bulky suits, playground scrapping, trying to fight each other, but they can't really fight that well because they're in these cumbersome suits. And so it was a lot of fun. I mean, I don't know how much fun it was for them. Those guys were troopers. I mean, they worked so hard. They were dripping with sweat. I think we ruined the suits, which was not great. They worked so hard. And then of course, as it all develops, we were using wires, which, you know, just takes more time, is more complicated. And, you know, they were throwing each other about all day, you know, always with a smile on their face, always wanting to go again and make the shot better. It was amazing. And actually we worked with the same stunt coordinator, Ilya, as we did on the first DJ Shadow. So we knew we were in safe hands there.
The first one, which I will bring up in a minute, that's a fight scene and a half. But anyways, so well, one of the things we were chatting on Twitter about this is the research you did on faking the moon landings. For this, I went into the Reddit rabbit hole of moon landing conspiracies. There's some interesting people out there.
Certainly are.
Given everything that's going on now, conspiracy theories, yeah, they're getting stranger by the moment. But this is the classic one. So what were some of your favorites that you saw and that you sort of nicked bits from to throw in? Because there's a lot of nods to some crazy stuff. I sort of thought the way you did the lighting rigs is kind of the way you look at these NASAs who've mocked up how they would have filmed it. And it looked really cool.
Yeah, I mean, well, one of our references was the 70s movie Capricorn One, which is about a faked Mars mission, which is in itself referencing the idea that people thought the moon landing was faked. So I looked at that, and there's a more recent movie called Operation Avalanche, which is all about the CIA faking the moon landing. So I looked at those for references of, you know, how we would set it up. But in terms of the conspiracy theories themselves, I mean, again, so Kubrick, which is a fairly well-known one, I think, but that's where he came from. So he wasn't in the original idea, but as I was sort of diving into it, it would have been wrong not to include him, to be honest. And there's a few little nods. So when they're fighting, one of them picks up a fake rock, and on the rock, which people probably don't even notice, but it says C. There's a C written on the rock. And on some forum somewhere, somebody had looked at a photograph from one of these, one of the moon landings, and had, you know, zoomed in onto one of the rocks, and where there's a letter C, which is C for conspiracy, right? Of course. And, you know, their whole point of view was that the astronauts were trying to reveal clues in the photographs that showed that it was fake. So there's things with Neil's watch and the time, which he was wearing a watch, and I had wanted to shoot, but we ran out of time. And again, we filmed, in fact, a flag sequence, because again, the whole like rippling flag, how does it ripple in that atmosphere? So we filmed that, but actually it never made the cut for timing reasons, but also because I had a flag in the previous one as the kind of climax, which is in itself a reference to a photograph from, which I can go, we can go into later if we talk about it, so because of the flag was in the other one, and although this was clearly a follow-up, I didn't want it to be too similar. So in the end, we dropped that one. But I mean, some of the ones I was reading, I mean, it's amazing. You know, people really will believe anything. There's one theory that a lot of the moon landings were shot in the Nevada desert. And I think they think that's what Area 51 is. And, you know, that's why no one's allowed to go in, because they've got all of this evidence that shows that they faked the moon landing, and that they filmed a lot of it in an area that used to be a junkyard. And someone had like super contrasted one of these photographs and was trying to show that there were car shapes in the moon surface, you know, in the shape of the rocks. And actually it was like cars piled up on top of each other that then people had, that they'd obviously poured sand on, bonkers stuff, to be honest. And you know, it's funny because the more I researched and the more, you know, I just wanted to put more and more in, and I was obviously limited by the time of the track, you know, budget and all the rest of it. But that's kind of why at the very end, it just felt right to do the mother of all conspiracies and show that the iconic Earthrise shot, but the Earth is flat, and the flag is Shadow's album cover and it's rippling, and the credits are in the Doctor Strangelove font because Kubrick shot it. It all just became, it was just me just geeking out on reference, basically, which was fun.
I've often thought that if they did have Kubrick to direct it, it would have been cheaper to go to the moon.
Well, that, yeah. In fact, somebody commented on the video that Kubrick did shoot it, but he was such a perfectionist that he went to the moon. So there you go.
You can kind of, that makes perfect sense, actually. It's a fantastic video. And like we said, it won the UK Music Video Awards Video of the Year for 2020,
yep,
which was fantastic. Congratulations for that.
Thank you.
That must have been a strange awards ceremony.
Yes, it's a shame. You know, it's one of those that's, you know, the highlight of the music video calendar, really. And it's always a good time, good party, and everyone has too much to drink and talks a load of shit and has a good time. So it was very bizarre to be both sober and sitting at home on my sofa. And to be honest, it was really unexpected. You know, you're always, you know, not always, but you're often nominated, and there's so many amazing videos made each year that you almost expect not to win. So it was a really pleasant surprise. And I'm really glad that both the colorist and the editor got their awards for it as well. So,
as I'm on my own here, I can do what I want. So we're going to talk quickly about your first DJ Shadow video, Nobody Speaks, which was with Run the Jewels, mainly because my mates, Stevie and John, if I don't bring up Killer Mike and LP in this, they will kill me. They have sent me questions, which we might get to make this history adjacent. Again, you've gone Kubrick-esque with the design, and I'm going to go 4 degrees of separation to the Hawker Typhoon, which is my mastermind subject. Is you can go Kubrick, then you go Ken Adam, the designer on Strangelove, who flew Typhoons with 609 Squadron during the war, which, as a German Jew, if he'd been caught, he would have been summarily executed. But he's fantastic. Yeah. It's absolutely mad story. Him and his brother were in adjacent squadrons, and they flew all through Normandy and through into 1945. Yeah.
Wow.
And and they left, didn't know what to do, and he became a set designer and
started making Bond sets. I think he did Doctor No.
He did, and the volcano in You Only Live Twice.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So yeah, you just think, well, there you go. He survived the most dangerous mission profile ever, and then created fantastic playgrounds for dangerous movies to be shot.
I mean, a total legend.
Oh yeah. So again, I guess you're sort of playing on that theme. You've sort of got a UN meeting, which basically kicks off, is the only way to put it, with the Run the Jewels, Killer Mike and LP's lyrics bantering back and forth. What fun that must have been, because when you start watching it, you know it's a Run the Jewels video. You know what's going to happen. But even when it does, you've got these two crusty old white guys being Mike and LP. That must have been a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was hilarious. And to be honest, it's one of those where, again, it was just great that Shadow, Mike and L, you know, loved the idea and let us just run with it. I think it was one of those when I listened to the track, they had such a kind of, that classic, you know, rap battle, bravado, back and forth, you know, witty punchlines. And of course, LP references Trump in one of the lyrics, that it all just kind of fell into place in my mind. And I, you know, it was at the time that, you know, it was sort of a bit of a case of right place, right time. It was right when things were kind of kicking off with Trump. And thankfully, it looks like we're now coming to the end of that crazy saga. But yeah, so it was right at that time. And you know, I just got thinking that, you know, the way that politicians spout this nonsense back and forth, you know, in debate is actually so similar to a rap battle, although obviously very different. So I just thought it would be hilarious to have these two crusty old white men spouting, you know, but again, a politician would never, ever swear because they're, you know, they're always trying to be on their best behavior. So I just
thought, sometimes you wish they would, though.
Absolutely. I think we all wish that politicians would be a bit more real and honest when they do speak in public. Matt Hancock is a prime example in his latest debacle. But anyway, I digress. It just felt like so much fun to have these crusty old white dudes saying things like, I'm a bag of dicks. You can bleep that bit out. But
you can say what you want on this show.
Love it. Love it. So that was really the premise. And then it's funny because although it in itself, it's not necessarily a historical UN meeting, in order to sell the idea to the guys, I cut together a little mood film using footage from the Frost Nixon movie when they have their interview. And even though the lip sync wasn't perfect on that, I mean, why would it be? They're saying different things. But I cut it in such a way that it was close enough. And I mean, it's one of those where, you know, just for a little clip for 15 seconds. And as soon as I cut it and I watched it, I laughed. So that's obviously like, that's a good thing. But, you know, I would laugh because I'd done it, right? So then sent it to...
Laughing at your own joke is always half the battle.
I mean, yeah, you exactly. But you want to make sure you're not the only one laughing. So sent it to Rick, the music video EP at Pulse. And then, yeah, he laughed and he sent it on to them and they were like, they loved it. So yeah, that was kind of how it all evolved.
I love that you've got Mike and Elle as sort of the voice of reason looking on, going, what on earth is going on in it as well?
Yeah, I mean, I really wanted them to be involved, to be part of it. And because I think it's great to have rappers who are usually, you know, bling bling, and not that they're necessarily bling bling rappers, but you know what I mean, the rap videos are often rappers being rappers, and actually it was great that they were really up for dressing in a suit and tie and acting like politicians. So that was really good fun. We shot with them separately in New York because it was the only day that Shadow, Mike and Elle were all in New York. So we had to shoot that separately before we'd shot anything else. But it was important that we did that. And then nice little Easter eggs for the fans just to have in. Yeah, I mean, I could go on talking about, I mean, you know, the video, I mean, the fight sequences were, you know, I was very keen on the idea that they felt almost like Renaissance paintings, like Raphael's The Battle of Ostia, The School of Athens. You know, the way those images are, that sort of, you know, very observed, wide, symmetrical, these kind of contorted moments of anguish. I was riffing off that for the wider shots of the fight.
You can see that because you've got so much going on in the frame. It's, you know, corralling that. Your stunt guys in the Ukraine did an amazing job because every time I watch it, I notice something else going on in the background.
Cool. That was the vibe. I mean, that was the thing, is we worked really hard with Ilya and his team to make sure that it wasn't just a case of, right, this action here, but it was like that it starts there and then you hit her and then she does this, just so that it felt like there was a visual progression rather than just violence. I mean, it's just violence, but at least that there was progression within it rather than just a big old punch up.
In both of the Shadow videos, you've got a lady saving the day, the tea lady stopping it in one, and I've forgotten her name.
Yes, I've forgotten her name as well. The only woman, the only female worker in Mission Control at the time. Yeah, I mean, listen, it only felt right in both versions. In fact, with the first video, it felt right that a working class, you know, what is seen as a working class job, that a working class woman came and saved the day against these stupid politicians. And in the second one, it only felt right that, again, an intelligent woman saved the day against the stupidity and bravado and arrogance of men. It is the world we live in is, you know, men behaving badly. And it just felt right that a woman should save us from that.
Fantastic. Right. I've kept you for long enough. Let's do a couple quick fire ones. This one's for Stevie and John. Are Mike and Elle as cool as we really hope they are?
100% yes. They are both such, you know, such lovable human beings. Super chill, of course, as you'd expect. And, you know, I mean, just Elle has such banter. I mean, we met them in New York when they were doing a recording or a rehearsal session. And he was just cracking jokes the whole time. And yeah, they're just, I mean, listen, they're the sort of guys you want to go and have a beer with or a spliff. You know, it's that kind of vibe.
Oh, yeah, that's really cool. Does Shadow ring you now and say, I've got an idea?
I wish. That would be amazing. I think we have each other's number because just from, you know, dealing with the jobs. And Shadow's such a nice, sweet guy. And again, a hero for me as a teenager, like you, I grew up listening to Introducing. So to be able to work with him is amazing. But when the video won Video of the Year at the UK MBAs, he texted me to say congrats, which, like, you know, he doesn't have to do that, you know. It's like, and so, you know, he's such a sweet guy. And on top of that, the Nobody Speaks record just went gold, the single went gold, and his management, like, put in contact and said, what's your address, we want to send you the gold plaque. So yeah, nice. No, I mean, listen, hopefully he at least considers doing another. I mean, look, it's most things, like, great things happen in threes, right? So good things happen in threes. So maybe, who knows? Maybe there'll be a third, but we'll see.
Okay, so a couple more, then we'll end this off. When you watch a sort of period piece, what irks you as a fan, maybe more so than as a professional?
I think one of the things, and it's not, there's two things. One of the things is when the script is in English, even though the historical event happens somewhere else. And that's not just historical movies, but it seems to somehow get wrapped up in that. Where, yeah, I mean, I get it. It's for a Western audience, but actually, you know, we're all smart. We can all read subtitles. And I think it takes you out of it. You know, if you've got something happening in Germany, but someone's speaking English, for me, that's a big, that irks me a lot.
Therefore, and put them in an English accent and we can pretend it's German.
Yeah. Or it's like, oh, they're speaking English, but with a German accent. And you're like, why aren't they just speaking German? And therefore, as a result of that, why didn't you cast a really great German actor who would have smashed the role? And I understand why, because, you know, you cast, I don't know, whoever it is, Eric Bana, for example, because he's a name and he's going to bring in the money and he's going to put the bums on the seats. So I get it, but that is, it just annoys me a little bit.
Okay. Favorite historical film, choose between your children.
Yeah. So favorite historical film, God, there's so many that I love and they're probably all not necessarily straight historical films. I mean, Full Metal Jacket, Munich, The Big Short, Apocalypse Now, Dunkirk, The Favourite, Letters from Iwo Jima, they're all good. But the one that, probably because I was a child when I first watched it, it just has to be Forrest Gump. Because of the way that they integrated Forrest in all of these events within history. I mean, you had Forrest teaching Elvis how to do the Elvis dance. Yeah. You know, you had him meeting the president. You know, playing ping pong against the champion at the time. I mean, it was kind of ingenious as a story to weave his journey through history. So that's probably the one that gets it.
I love that movie. And we did one of our Down the Pubs last night, which where we just basically get together and bitch about a subject, and it was love bad. It. Bad history movies. 4 hours it went on.
Oh, which one won?
this is terrible. It went on so long last night I can't really remember. But the other Berlin Girl came up pretty high. That might have won, actually.
Right.
Very long rants about Birth of a Nation and.
Oh, I mean, yes, that's definitely. I mean, talk about a movie that has shaped the prejudice in America Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, you just...
How Spike Lee used it in Black Klansman when he was cutting between
very clever
watching it and Paul Robeson. That was
very
that
clever.
Was amazing.
Yeah.
Right, you get to spend a day on set. You can choose between Kubrick and Nolan. I think I know which way you're going to go. But who would you like to spend a day learning from?
Kubrick. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, but that would involve time travel. So if time, yes, if I can't time travel, then definitely Nolan. but Kubrick. I mean, I think I would probably have loved to have been on 2001 just to have a go on the spinning set, if nothing else. If that was the only thing I got to do on the day, and make Kubrick a cup of tea or cup of coffee, I'd probably be happy.
So is that why you did the spinning set for the Galaxy Chocolate?
That, well, it's fun. I mean, you talk about Kubrick and Nolan, both because of that and because of Nolan's hallway fight scene in Inception, both references. So, yeah.
Right. Sam, I've taken up far too much of your time, but thank you so much for joining us on History Hack. This has been really, really good fun. And yeah, just really thanks, mate.
This absolute pleasure. I've really enjoyed it. And hopefully people listening find it fun too.
I'm sure they will. I'd like to thank Sam one last time for joining us on History Hack. Please be sure to check out Sam's website, where you can find all his videos, commercials, and the really cool behind-the-scenes videos at sampling.com. You can also follow Sam on the Twitter machine at sampling45, that's sampling as in sampling a track, and on Instagram at s45mpling. We have loads of great shows coming up with you, with Alex and Alina blasting through the next month the full fat History Hack goodness right as we speak. And also don't forget, we have Princess Marcus and Zach White returning with more sharpshooters and my very own hedgehopping outings on the Thursdays of the month. And now, could we trouble you for your support of History Hack? In 2020, when the boss ladies, Alex and Alina, started History Hack, the world was very strange. And unfortunately, it looks like 2021 is going to be equally strange. We would love it if you're able to support the podcast in any way. It will allow us to keep up the regularity of the pods and also the great guests that we've been able to bring you over the last year. We exist on Patreon as History Hack and also on Podbean, our podcast host's own platform called Patreon. The reward tiers are being updated at the moment, so there's going to be some fantastic options for you to choose from. So if you're able to support us, that would be fantastic. So we thank you very much, and until the next time.